most polls leading up to Tuesday's presidential election consistently predicted a win for Hillary Clinton. And predictions like those led to a big surprise for many voters from both political parties who woke up on Wednesday to find Donald Trump the new president-elect of the United States. There were similar upsets at the state level where polls predicted a win for Russ Feingold over Ron Johnson in the U.S. Senate race. So what happened? Charles Franklin joins us now. He's a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University and director of the Marquette Law School Poll. He's also the co-founder of Pollster.com and founder of PollsandVotes.com. Charles, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
Let's start with a basic question on many people's minds. How did the polls apparently get it as wrong as they did?
Well, we did. And, you know, that's an important first step, is to say we got the wrong winner. That's a big surprise. There are two things here that, excuse me, Rob, I'm still coughing.
You're doing a lot of talking this week, I'm sure.
Yes. Especially with the presidential race. My last poll had Clinton ahead by 6. It looks like Trump was winning by 1. That's a big discrepancy, not just the wrong winner, but also numerically a big discrepancy from the outcome. But we were lucky this year to have a lot of polls by other organizations also working in the state. And the average across those polls was a 5.8 Clinton margin. So in a way, it would be better if only my poll had been wrong, because that would just be one poll and the rest were right, and it was, you know, just one bad poll. But over the entire year, not a single poll done in Wisconsin showed Trump winning. And the average was 5.8, and if you look at the most recent polls, they were 6 and 7 and 5. And so they were very consistent there. That shows that something systematically went wrong rather than that one single poll went wrong. As for what? Well, one possibility is people change their minds late. And we actually do see that in the Wisconsin exit poll, that 14% said they decided in the last week, and they went for Trump by a 59 to 30% margin, a very big late break for Trump, and something that occurred after all the other polls were conducted in the state. So that's one part. The other is, did we identify likely voters accurately? That's something that we're working on still. We'll have some quick answers in another day or two, but a lot of those answers are going to have to wait until things like the final certification of the vote, and especially the updating of the voter list, the registered voter list, which will take several months to complete.
Now, that's in Wisconsin you're focusing on, Wisconsin presidential race. There was a similar story in many other battleground states. Hillary Clinton in the lead in polls, Donald Trump winning maybe a narrow victory. Is there some kind of systematic problem that would be likely to happen in state polling in a lot of different states?
Well, demonstrably there were. The Pennsylvania and Michigan polls were just about as far off as the Wisconsin polls were on the average across all the polls. Other states that were simply close had polls that generally were also close. So North Carolina, the polling was mostly close. Ohio, the polling was mostly close. So where we're really seeing these big discrepancies are in especially these three Midwestern states that went for Trump, though I might add Minnesota in the mix, even though Clinton won it narrowly. We'd like to look there and see if this has something to do with the kinds of states we are, the kind of demographic makeup we have. And that would point to voters who were either being missed in our likely voter models or late-breaking opinion among certain groups. The exit polls will help us identify those things. And as I say, there will be other data that comes in over the next few months that lets us look at new voters and also look at people who dropped out of the electorate after having voted in say 2008 and 2012. But that project, those kinds of data are going to take several months before they're available.
Talking to pollster Charles Franklin from Marquette University about discrepancies between pre-election polls and the actual election result. Charles, looking at the overall national popular vote numbers, it looks like they weren't that crazy far off. A national polling showing, you know, leads for Hillary Clinton, maybe 3 or 4% were some of the last ones I saw. She ended up winning the popular vote, for what that's worth, not much, but they were only really a couple percentage points off when it all is said and done.
That's right, and that will be one of the, if you want to call it a bright spot of the polls, is that the national data overstated her vote by a little bit, but not by a lot. Now, the fact that Trump wins the Electoral College and the presidency is a pretty big, important thing. But, you know, the national polls aren't trying to measure that. The national polls are looking at the overall national vote, and it does appear that Clinton will win that by a million or so votes once all of the late votes are tallied.
I want to ask a question about why we poll. I saw a John Cohen from SurveyMonkey. They've been working on polling, talking about, hey, it's important that we look at what happened here, get it right. And I'm quoting now, public opinion work is too important to our democracy and too important to understanding ourselves and our society to fade away. That's not your quote, Charles, but do you want to defend that? Do you want to back it up? Is public opinion work, are these polls important to our democracy?
No, I certainly support that argument. You know, there are a couple of things. One is, of course, none of us want to be wrong, and you know, there's going to be a lot of effort to see what went wrong and how we change it. Some of that could be really easy. If late-breaking vote decisions are dramatically different, like they appear to be, according to the exit polls, then that's a fairly easy problem. We just need to poll through the weekend before the election. So we could do that pretty easily. But if there are types of voters that we're systematically missing, maybe because they don't want to do polls, they're not available for pollsters, but in the past it didn't matter because they weren't voting much, if they voted now in this election for the first time, that's a big deal and we need to work, and that's a harder problem to fix. But I think what Cohen says that I really resonate to is, of course, the horse race matters a lot and gets a lot of attention, but polls are a way for the public to speak, a way to give everyone an equal chance to be represented in the poll and to have their say and to be reported as this percentage favors one thing and that percentage favors another. It's a part, just a part, but a part of the public dialogue in how we talk to each other and how we develop a democracy where citizens hear each other's opinions. So in that way, I'm very much with Cohen. We're, as pollsters, at least partly thinking that we're helping democracy in that way. You know, and that remains an important part of the polling enterprise.
Let me throw maybe a mini hypothesis at you about this particular election where you had two major party candidates with historically high negatives. A lot of people didn't like them, but maybe a lot of people are thinking, I'm going to vote, I'm civically minded, I'm going to vote, and I want my vote to go to a candidate who's going to win. Maybe a lot of these people decided as they were filling out the ballot. I mean, maybe that poll even the day before the election wouldn't have helped that much. And something about those candidates made more of them break toward Donald Trump in the final analysis. Is that something that's going to just foil polling accuracy? It's going to add some uncertainty?
Well, I'm not quite prepared to go to spoil it, but it's certainly a part of the issue, because if that's the dynamic in the polling, in the voting booth, then short of pollsters following you into the voting booth, we're not going to get that. But there's some evidence for what you say and that it mattered a lot. In the exit polls, on a number of questions, they asked about opinions of Clinton and Trump. So is your opinion favorable or unfavorable to each? And other things, qualified for president and so on. Of the group that said they had a unfavorable opinion of both Clinton and Trump, Donald Trump got 58% of that vote, Hillary Clinton 22%. And so there's a category of negative to both, but the vote overwhelmingly went to Trump rather than Clinton. That's another way that we see how either people were more willing to forgive Trump for his shortcomings, or perhaps thought Hillary Clinton's shortcomings were somehow more serious. But it's clear that we're seeing a very large, almost 3-to-1, certainly 2-to-1, more than 2-to-1 advantage for Trump in those situations, where 22% of the public had a negative view of both. But in the end, rather than staying home, they came to the polls and they gave substantially more support to Trump.
We're talking about the discrepancies between the outcome of the election and the polls preceding it with Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University and director of the Marquette Law School poll. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Were you surprised, like many people in both parties, by the difference between the poll results and election outcome? How do you account for that, or what do you want to ask Charles Franklin about that? Were you addicted to the polls through this last week, last bunch of months, last year? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our examination of the discrepancy between the outcome of the election and the poll predictions leading up to it. You can join in at 800-642-1234, post on the Central Time Facebook page, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Charles Franklin stays with us from Marquette University, director of the Marquette Law School poll. And we'll go to your calls now with Greg in McHenry, Illinois. Greg, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Yep, so I had one quick comment for Charles. And that would be, what is the real purpose of the poll? That would be number one. And two, if the poll is for the people more so, would it also not be for the candidates? Because if they knew that they were behind in a state, they'd be able to spend more money.
Greg, thanks for the call. Charles, sure. Who uses polls for what?
Those are both great questions. Let me answer the second one first. The candidates have far more polling than I have. You know, they have millions and millions of dollars behind their polling operations. And so really the issue is not, is our polling affecting the candidates, but rather if we, and I mean that collectively, pollsters in general, not just my poll, if there weren't those public polls, then it would only be the candidates and the parties that knew what public opinion was doing, and there'd be no one to present that data, because obviously the campaigns are only going to let out what they want to let out. So that's why I think it's important, and to answer your first question, that there be a source not connected to the parties or the candidates or the interest groups who do their own polling, but who can provide information about what the public is thinking. So right now, one of the questions is going to be, what happens to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare? The Senate Majority Leader said that they would move to repeal that. Well, we have polling that shows opinion fairly divided, a little bit more opposed to the Affordable Care Act rather than in favor. But we also have data that shows that when you ask, what do you want to do, the public is quite divided on that, with a fair number of people saying they want to expand it. We wouldn't know that if there weren't independent polls being conducted to address this policy issue. You know, it'll ultimately be up to the elected officials about what they want to do about policy, but the polling helps us understand whether the public is lopsided on one side or another, or pretty evenly divided, as it happens to be on health care reform.
Back to our callers with John in La Crosse. John, hi.
Questions about the sampling pools. I guess my question would be, how is the information obtained during the poll? Is it done exclusively through landlines? And if so, wouldn't that skew the demographics and then also cause maybe a potential problem with the sampling pool, because the demographics of landline use would not include, you know, millennials potentially and other groups of people?
John, that's a question a lot of people are asking. Let me throw in another wrinkle. D emails. I'm not one to answer any kind of poll. I hung up on the calls. And then, of course, we've got internet polling coming in. Charles, It's a different age. People aren't answering their landlines at home anymore. Right. How is that affecting polling?
Right. So let me answer John's question first. We include cell phones. Half of our respondents are on cell phone, half are on landline. You're dead right that there's a big difference. Trying to find anybody under about 45 on a landline is really hard. But that's why we interview half by cell. And the best statistics show that that's about where cell phone only usage is. So we're representing the cell phones. And the way it's sampled is to give every phone number in the state an equal chance of being called, whether it's a landline or a cell phone. So we do that quite well. And all the media polls now include cell phones in all of their samples. So we've gotten past the cell phone problem. We still have the problem of people not picking up or hanging up, as you just said. There, the issue is that at least up until now, we've had good evidence that Democrats and Republicans alike both hate telemarketers and so tend not to pick up the phone or not to complete the interview. And because it's bipartisan, we really don't see a partisan bias in the responses. The fact that we got these errors this time does raise the question of, is it possible that, that some set of Trump supporters also consistently refuse to do the poll in a disproportionate way compared to Clinton supporters not doing the poll. And that's something we'll examine very closely going forward, something we've been looking for all year and not found much evidence for. But now in the wake of these polling errors, we'll go back and give it a much more fine-tooth combed examination.
John, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking with Charles Franklin from the Marquette University and the Marquette Law School Survey. Go back to our callers now. Scott is with us in Madison. Scott, hi.
Hi. Hey, Charles. Is there any thought to it, maybe, with all the polls that are out and all the information? I know they do them pretty close right up to the election day, but do you think people might be swayed at all when they hear, you know, the 5%, 6%, 7% projected lead, that somebody might say, well, you know, if somebody has a 6%, 7% lead, do I even really need to go out and vote? Is it worth it because they already got this wrapped up?
Yeah, that's a good question, too, and it's something that pollsters do fret about. I certainly do, and encourage people not to listen to my poll on that. Go out and vote. Here's the best evidence on it. When we look at polling done since 1998 up through at least last time, where the polls show somebody ahead by 6 or 8 or 10 points, the outcome of the election is still pretty close to that 6 or 8 or 10. If people were being discouraged from voting because they thought their guy had it sewn up, then we would see the actual vote be closer than what the poll showed. And conversely, another plausible story, if people like to jump on a bandwagon, you'd expect to see them actually get more of the vote than what the polls show. And at least before this year, there was not a consistent movement above or below the polls. On average, they were quite close to the outcome. So that's the reason I don't think there's much discouragement or perhaps encouragement of voting when you see a margin in the polls.
Scott, thanks. We'll go to Rachel in Bayfield next. Rachel, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about?
I was going to mention how I had planned to vote defensively against Trump and go with Hillary, but once I got into that booth, I couldn't rightfully vote for Hillary either, and I changed my mind and went Green Party at the last minute. And I know that was one thing my teenage daughter was so upset about, like, why would you vote for someone that's not going to win? But I know in my heart and kind of knowing what was right, it was a last-minute change for me.
Rachel, thanks for the call. I imagine maybe it's not always Clinton to Stein, but there are voters out there who think they have their mind made up and have that voting booth crisis.
I think that's certainly reasonable. In the exit poll, of the 16% who said neither Clinton nor Trump was qualified to be president, Trump got 63% to Clinton's 15%, but Gary Johnson got 16% and Jill Stein 4%. So that's 20% of the public that were dissatisfied with both major candidates and chose to go with one of the third-party candidates. And that's, you know, that's fine. These people don't own your vote. If they haven't earned it, giving it to someone else seems to me a perfectly reasonable thing. But it's a large magnitude here of 20% of folks unhappy with both candidates that chose a third party this time, just as Rachel did.
We'll leave it there for now. Charles, thanks a lot for taking the time with us today.
Always a pleasure, Rob. Thanks.
That's Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, director of the Marquette Law School Poll. He also founded PollsandVotes.com and co-founded Pollster.com.